This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 287 of Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. This episode, as always, is supported by In Digital, a leader in next-gen core services. And today is August 22nd. It's Thursday, and it's about 12:40 p.m. Eastern Time. And I am back, freshly back from the National APCO conference that was held over in Baltimore, Maryland. And I ended up, I was there with my 9 to 5 in digital. And, you know, we were giving demos for our products and all types of things. We were doing a lot of different stuff. But I was also there with the podcast. And I did my Imagine Listening session. I had it on Monday, and then I had a repeat session on Tuesday. And then actually just before the repeat session, a gentleman with APCO ended up coming up with to me and asked me if I would be interested in doing the session a third time on Wednesday morning. And I was honored. And of course, I said, yes, let's do it. So I got to do it three times. So over those 3 days of doing Imagine Listening, I gave out about 75 official I Am 911 Challenge Coins. Those are people that shared their stories. And then for those in attendance, they ended up getting an I Am 911 pin, the official I Am 911 pin, a lapel pin. And that was almost 300 pins that I gave out. It was an honor to be with all of you at that session. Thank you so much for the support and for sharing your stories and for all of you being there together and for each other. I know I say it all the time, but it's hard to put into words other than saying that it was powerful, what it's like being in that session, because you're in a room with all these people who come from the same place that you do, and they're sharing stories that you can relate to. And it's just another way, in the fashion of peer support, but for people to get some sort of healing. Closure rather, and then heal as well, all of us together. So again, thank you all so much for going to the session and being out there. I've got, again, this is episode 287. When I started the sessions there, it was episode 281. So I got episodes 281 through 286. Now 281 and 282 are going to be a little bit out of order, only because APCO International, they record their sessions, but you have to wait 2 weeks before they come out. And I was unable to record it myself for that first one, but I did get 283 through 286. So those episodes are going to be coming out first. I did put out episode 283 earlier today, and it's one you don't want to miss. It's a very, very good episode. Again, powerful stories coming out of there from the most vital piece of public safety, and that's dispatch. I Am 901 Day is coming up. It's going to be August 24th. By the time you hear this, it will have already been passed August 24th. So one of the things I'm going to mention right now, because I'm sure I'm going to mention this on that day as well, is that what I'm trying to figure out, what I'm trying to do for I Am 911 Day 2020 is to partner up with the National Law Enforcement Museum in DC and try to hold an exhibit there in their exhibit room and put up all of these stories for people to be able to come in and learn more about what it is that all of you do on a daily basis, that you're not just there answering the phone. You're there with your callers throughout all of it. And for my guest today, you just heard a sneak peek at what I'm trying to do. This is the first time I'm ever mentioning it. But this is something that I'm trying to do, and I hope that it ends up going through. It would be amazing to be able to do that, to be able to share more of these stories and get them out there to a bigger audience, especially there in Washington, D.C. at the National Law Enforcement Museum. So going on from there, I've got my guest today. Her name is Sarah, and she's a dispatcher with South Metro Fire Rescue out of Colorado. How's it going?
Well, hello. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Now that we've got our connections figured out, I'm doing good.
Perfect. Me too. And I'm glad we got it worked out. I'm new to this whole podcast Skype thing, but you sound great.
Thank you. And so do you. So for those who are listening, just to give a little bit of background, we had started doing this and we were having some audio issues and stuff. So I had her call in on my cell phone. And one of the best things is that with this system that I have, I can actually just I can Bluetooth my phone to my audio interface and bring Sarah right in. And it's like she's sitting next to me. So it's really good. So I'm glad we got this figured out and that you are on, and we're going to learn a lot about you, because this episode it's about you. This is your 911 story that everyone is going to learn about. So to start out with, I mean, how did you get into dispatching to begin with? I think you're going on about 7 years, right?
Correct. Yep. Dispatching sort of was not anything that I had thought of when I was younger. You know, and a lot of your guests or guests you've had before talk about going to school for criminal justice and things like that. And I wish I would have thought of a path like that when I was younger. However, I did not. I had been in doing office work, admin, stuff like that up until I found dispatch. And I had been laid off from a job that I'd been at for about 6 years doing office work. I was the office manager for a little while, just a real small family owned service company. Got laid off from that. And so I was trying to find something that paid well for one, but that I enjoyed, because after working at that company for a while, I just gotten to the point where I wanted a job that meant something, because I was tired of talking to customers and having to come up with reasons why my technicians were late or their bill was expensive or why we needed to go back because it wasn't done right the first time.
Right.
It was really wearing on me. So I started looking at governmentjobs.com. I mean, I was kind of looking for anything. I had applied for an animal control position because I thought, I love animals. I could do that. And dispatch sort of fell in my lap. And I always tell people, I put the magic word in my resume and in my application, because not ever being in emergency services prior to or having any kind of inclination is to going into that field, I had no idea what dispatch really meant. And in my world at the time, I dispatched technicians to their addresses and jobs all the time, right? Like, I sent them here, I sent them there, I told them what to do. I dispatched? No, not even close to what real dispatching is. But I had that magic word in my resume that got me through the first application process. And then I got to take critical, and I passed my critical, then I was able to do my interview. And I will always have to thank my two bosses from my first agency, Sandy and Doug, for taking a chance on a newbie. Because a lot of agencies want someone that's got some prior experience. But how do you get into dispatch if you don't have any prior experience? So they were willing to take a chance on me. And I'm so grateful. I will forever be grateful for that, because that what allowed me to find the job that I love.
That's great. It's kind of like myself. You know, when I first started out in Central Florida, I didn't know a thing about dispatching either. I went in there with the only knowledge of Rescue 911 with William Shatner, which was one of my favorite shows growing up. But that's all I had. That's all I knew. And then the chief of police, Chief Byrd and Lieutenant Ard, you know, they did the same thing. You know, they gave me a shot. I had no experience coming in, and I really, really fell in love with it. And I've been doing all of this since 2001. So it's been amazing to be able to do that. And then, so for you, you know, when you first started out, then when you were getting into this, did you do any sit-alongs or anything so that you could kind of get an idea for what it was like?
I didn't do them prior to applying. No. So I didn't do any sit-alongs until I was actually in the training process. So the first agency I worked for was Littleton Fire Rescue. Mm-hmm. I started there in November of 2012. And for whatever reason, November is like the magic month for me. That has become my dispatcherversary. I've worked at three different agencies now, and just oddly enough, happened to have started each one in November, almost to the day. But so I did some sit-alongs when I was in my training with Littleton. They had me sit with Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office and kind of see what it's like at a primary PSAP, because Littleton Fire was a secondary because they just did fire and EMS. And then I actually got to attend the APCO conference last year in Vegas, mm-hmm. which was amazing. Like, that's the first time I'd ever been in any kind of big conference like that. And then for it to be the APCO conference, this, all of, as you know, like all of the things that are available to you there, going and seeing other centers. And since it was in Vegas, just what amazing classes we had. And the, you know, Las Vegas Metro did a session, almost like a debrief from the festival shooting, but I got to go to a couple of PSAPs out there. It's not really a sit-in per se, but to tour their PSAP and have them kind of talk about the way that they process their calls. Pretty eye-opening for me. So I haven't had a chance to visit any other states, but it sounds really crazy, but I think it would be really fun to do, you know, almost like a cross-country dispatch tour, just because every state is different in the way that they handle calls, the technology that they have at their disposal. And it gives me an appreciation for the agency that I work for now, what we have in our center and how it's set up and how it's managed. But it also kind of shows the diversity of just the country in and of itself. Like, are you in a very small town and the, you know, struggles and things you have to deal with there, or you want a really big metropolis and how that looks. I've never been in a giant dispatch center like Denver has. Their dispatch center is massive because they do Denver PD, Denver Fire, and Denver Health, which is where the paramedics. And, you know, they probably have 30 dispatchers. Never seen anything like that. I think it would just be fascinating to do like a dispatcher cross-country tour.
That actually sounds, that's a really good idea. Because, right? Yeah, I mean, you're right. You know, you go, so in my job, my 9-to-5 job within digital, I'm their director of communications. So I'm also one of their trainers for, you know, dispatchers for different customers and such. So when I travel around, you know, I get to sit in and all these different centers. So it's just like the way you're talking about it. You know, they've got all of these different policies and procedures. Some of them are the same, you know, a lot of the common ones, but then you look at, you know, some of them are in a basement. Others are upstairs with windows. The old center that I come from, we've got these huge windows that look out on an all sport lake. And in the wintertime, you could be able to step outside and see deer come up and all, cause we were in the middle of the woods is where my center was at. But then, you know, you've got other ones, where like Fairfax, you know, that one, that place is massive. I've never been inside it, but just from the pictures alone, it's almost overwhelming. I mean, it's huge. It's just crazy. And then, you know, my buddy, Adam Tim, he talks in some of the episodes or just talking in general, when he talks about working for LAPD, you know, all of that is just real massive as well. And like you said, the technology is completely different. And there are actually some areas, those who are listening, believe it or not, that still don't have an actual 911 type service. You've got to call a 10-digit number to get to police or to get to fire. And those are very rural areas, but they're out there. It's mm-hmm. rare, but they are out there. So you're getting started. And what was it like for you then? You know, let's kind of paint a picture for those who are listening. What was it like for you to walk in? What are you looking at? Are there several screens? You've got a couple of radios, or what does it look like for you when you're going in there in the beginning? And what was that like? Because you're coming from, you know, more of an administrative type, jobs that you were doing, like you said in the beginning, and now you're switching over and there's so much more to it. So what was that like for you in the beginning?
Very frightening.
Yeah.
you definitely get that aha moment. Like when you do walk in and you see all the screens, you're like, oh my gosh, people actually work like this. This is someone's desk. It's exciting and invigorating all at the same time. So Littleton was definitely a small department. We shared a room with Littleton Police. But it was small and dark. So talking about one of those cave-like dispatch centers, it was in a very old building built in the 70s, all brick. So dispatch itself was dark. Mm-hmm. And the fire side, Littleton Fire, we only had two dispatchers working at a time. So it was you and your partner. I was in training for 12 weeks, which, now I'm on to my third agency now, which is hopefully my forever agency. My training has been a bit longer. At the new agency, I was in training for a couple of months rather than just 12 weeks. But Littleton was small. I already knew the area because I grew up in Littleton, so I was very familiar with the geography. So that part was pretty easy for me to learn. But it was actually, obviously the call taking and the radio dispatching that were completely foreign to me. And I will never forget the day I was supposed to get checked out and get released and to be on my own. Doug and Sandy pull me aside and they have this little heart to heart with me. And they're like, Sarah, if you don't just make a decision. It's kind of one of those, you either gotta, for lack of a better term, shit or get off the pot. Like, the call is coming in. Yeah. That's basically what they said to me. They're like, you know how to do the job. You can do this job. Stop second guessing yourself. There's no one else behind you anymore. Mm-hmm. If you want to stay here, you gotta do this. And up until that point, I think I was just too afraid to make the wrong choice, to make the wrong decision, because as we all know, right, you're dealing with people's emergencies, people's lives, they're calling because they need help. And so I was just still that frightened little, oh my God, I don't want to do anything wrong. But having that heart to heart that day, that was the little slap that I needed. And then it was just go out, do your job. And that actually is what got me to really love dispatch, because I realized I can do this job and I really enjoy doing this job. What was I so afraid of? So
it's funny that you say that, because it is something that we need. And I know that I've, like I said, this is episode 287. So I've probably said this many times, but I will say it again, because I can relate to you. When I started at the last dispatch center that I was working at, in Allegan County, it was the county that I grew up in. And the first, domestic call that I ended up taking, I remember taking the call and having an issue trying to put the complaint in on the CAD, the computer aided dispatch system, so that, the person on radios could read it to get somebody out there. And I looked over at my trainer, and I think I was in the third phase of training. I wasn't in the shadow phase yet, where I'm just doing it all on my own. And I said, I think you need to take this. And she's like, no, you can do this. It just the same way that they were telling you, you can do this. You know how to do this. You're going to be fine. And I did, I finished it. And afterwards she's like, you see, you did it. And it's what I needed. I needed that kind of confidence boost, but also that kick in the ass to say, no, you can do this. And went through it and just continued on. And in all the disciplines that you've worked, what was your most favorite? Because you said and what I mean by disciplines, for those who are listening, you've done police, fire, and EMS, because there are some dispatch centers that only do one, or they only do another, or someone is just on law enforcement and others are call takers doing the other thing. But I did all disciplines as well. So which one was your favorite? I guess.
So I'll say fire and EMS is my favorite. Mm-hmm. I came back to it after being at a sheriff's office for 2 years. And that sheriff's office did it all, but it was a primary, the sheriff's office, so primarily law, but then they dispatched for like 11 different fire departments, some career, and for those that don't know what career means, those are the paid guys, and some volunteers. Those are the ones that do it out of the kindness of their heart. Right. God loves the volunteer firefighters. And then they did EMS as well, so they had EMD and things like that. I left the sheriff's office to go back to a secondary PSAP, fire and EMS only, so back to South Metro. I found at the sheriff's office, I can be a law dispatcher. I really don't enjoy it. I can do it if I have to, and I think that that was a good thing for me to learn. When I left Littleton Fire, it was hard leaving. There was some changes going on with that department. There was some consolidation going on, and the management was a little, there was just some issues. And so that's when I left for the sheriff's office and thought, well, okay, let's try this. Maybe I need to, you know, expand my skill set. And I was there for 2 years and then again, found myself back at a fire department. I have to give mad props to the guys and gals that do law dispatch. It is tough being a primary PSAP when you are the true first 911 contact. That is a difficult job, and the public just has no idea. And I can't even imagine, like, you're talking about your friend that worked for LA and stuff like that, being in a mass capital like that. The amount of calls and type of calls that you get. I mean, I was working in Douglas County. We're still suburbia. You know, some of it's a little bit rural, and the calls that I would get even there, I was just like, man, this is crazy. I can't believe this happens on a regular basis.
Right. Yeah.
And I think for me, another reason why I prefer fire over law, and again, props to the law dispatchers, because I kind of feel like it's one of those, you either love it, I don't want to say you hate it, but you either love it and it's your jam, or you kind of look at the radios that day and you're like, oh, I have to.
Right. Like, damn it.
Yeah. Like, I'll do it, but okay, fine. And maybe it's just my cops or the cops that were out at Douglas, the deputies. It's very different than fire, because if you're doing law, you have 15 to 20 deputies. They're all over the place, right? They're working their district. They're running their traffic stop. They're running their domestic. They may or may not be paying attention to the rest of the radio traffic unless you hit emergency tones. And then all ears perk up and they're like, oh, shoot, something is happening. So you got a lot of cops in a lot of different places, and you got to keep track of them, almost like herding cats. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that in a work way. It's kind of hard. It can be difficult to manage all of that. For me, we'll say others do a much better job. And for fire, if you have a lot going on, typically it's all in one spot. You know, you got your big structure fires, and it's just different radio traffic. There's a lot going on, you know, but again, they're primarily kind of condensed into one call, because that's the big call that's going right on right at that moment, versus having 25 deputies, you know, walking over each other or walking over you and not really paying attention. So
right.
That's why I said I found I can do it. And if I needed to, I could absolutely go back to that job and do that type of dispatching. But my heart's in fire and EMS. And that's where I seem to be the happiest and the most fulfilled, and go home to my family not wanting to choke the dog.
Oh man. Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. You know, for me, you know, cause we did it all, right there in the building, fire, EMS, and law enforcement. And my, so when I kind of going back really quick to, that first call that it was, you know, that domestic, those ended up being my favorite calls to take. Now it's weird for people to hear that's, you know, that was my favorite call, was taking domestic ones. But it's not because I'm being an ass. It's because those were the ones that I connected with people the most. And not just that, but I was able to help them and use all of my resources to be able to help them. And that's why I love taking those calls. Because that's where I felt, you know, I really, really excelled with those. I mean, I excelled with, you know, all the calls that I was taking, but those were the ones that were really something for me. Again, because of that connection with people and trying to help them through their situations. But also Maine law enforcement radio. That was, I was one of those where that was my jam. I would go on there and, you know, we would have a drunk driving grant going on where you've got, you know, 15, 20 officers just pulling people over and pulling people over. And I remember I would look over at my partner who was not only backup radios, but they were in, for NCIC, in Michigan, it's called lane. So that, you know, when you're running your license plates and licenses and everything like that, warrants, all that stuff, you know, that it goes through that person. So I would look at him and say, you ready? Like, this is going to be a long night because I loved working midnight. So, you know, they would come on and we would just be going just balls to the wall, just traffic stop, traffic stop, traffic stop, or somebody would take off and then emergency traffic. And, you know, everyone is on the main channel and every landmark or street, cross street, anything like that, you know, they're yelling it out. And I repeat it back for those who are going to head that way to assist them and then go just going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then it would be done. And they're like, all right, quick breather. Now let's get back into it. And, you know, you just keep going throughout that whole time. So, yeah, I can definitely relate. Now, back to the beginning, where you started and everything. But what was the training like then? Because you talked about how the training was different in each place, and now at the center that you're at, it was a little bit longer. So, what types of stuff do you do? Because I know every center is different for the training. Like, what do they do with you? Because for myself, we had to learn all the geography first and then the policies and procedures, of course, and then any codes that needed to be used, either over the radio or through the computer to log all of our stuff in. And then, you know, there were different things for each phase. So what was the training like for you?
Yeah, so it was about the same. Started out, so at Littleton Fire, my first agency, start out with your book work. So I had 3 weeks of book work and they put you on grade for that. And it's mostly because they give you your binder. You know, you kind of got your different sections in the binder that had a little bit of information for each section, like section one is about your book work, section two would be about your phone phase, section three would be about the radio phase. And then you would just spend the night going through all the policies and procedures, reading them, signing off on them. That's when you kind of study the geography, try and learn your 100 blocks, try and learn your apparatus, station locations, command staff, all that kind of stuff. So it was really more this study phase, learning the nuts and bolts and the basics of the district and the agency. And then after those 3 weeks, you know, you take a test. They just, you know, tests were really simple, but, you know, basically, you know, making sure you could remember or recite your 100 blocks, you know, station location, command staff, and then you'd move on to the phone phase. And then phones were 4 weeks, 4 weeks of phones. So, you know, you basically get 1 week of observation. And then the next 3 weeks, you were supposed to start taking your phone call. Start out with your non-emergent, move over to your 911. And they tried to get you over to be EMD certified while you were still in your phone week. So that by the time you moved over to radios, you were certified. You could take phones if you needed to. And then then you had 4 weeks of radios, you know, same thing, you kind of had observation, then you were supposed to try and start doing radio traffic either. And at Littleton, we aired everything. So when I say aired everything, I mean, we did the initial airings of the, you know, address, map page, problem nature, units responding. And then once they would go en route, then you'd give the additional information and stuff like that. The agency that I'm at now actually has a computerized program that does the initial airing for us. And then where we give the additional information or, you know, any other kind of radio traffic that comes to the radios at that point. So it's a little bit different in that respect, but the agency I'm at now, we call her Lola. Lola likes to tell the units where to go, and we just give all the others. We give the extra stuff. So at Littleton, after you had your radios week, then you had like a week of checkout where you were supposed to do everything on your own and just sort of be, you know, shadowed before you could get checked out. And that center was different in the fact that the shifts there, they actually ran 8-hour shifts. So you worked 5/8, and then you'd have 2 days off, and then you'd work 5/8 again, and then you'd have 3 days off. So every 2 weeks, you'd have a 3-day weekend, but you were working like a regular 40-hour week, 8-hour shift, whether you were day shift, wings, or grades. It's different a little bit.
Yeah. Most,
I think most centers are like 4/10s, or they try and do the 12s or whatever.
Yeah,
it's a little different.
My center, when I was there, we did 3/12s and a 4, and we would have every other weekend off. Now, from what I've heard, they've switched to the sheriff's department schedule, so they're on 8s, and it sounds like it's working a lot better. You know, it's kind of interesting though that you say that you've got Lola gives, which is the same name as my daughter. that Lola gives out the initial send out for the information, and I wonder if that cuts down at all on people giving something out and messing it up in the beginning before actually reading it. And I say that because I was one of those people where if there was a beyond the lookout, a BOL or a BOLO, it depends on which region of the United States you are. It's either a BOL or it's a BOLO, a BOLO. But either way, it's all the same thing. So there would be times where, you know, I'd be just going and going and going, and someone, I would hear them saying that, you know, they've got a car that's swerving all over the road or whatever, going northbound on US 131. And I wouldn't look at it to read it first. And I would just open it and then just put it out over the air and then stumble sometimes. And I would chuckle. I would chuckle on the air and say, let me try that again. And then just start doing it, because I knew that if I didn't call myself out, someone was going to give me shit over the radio for it, or they were going to send me a message. So why not call out myself to take away their power?
Right. Well, there you go. I mean, I think we've all had that foot in, insert foot here on the radio. I had to give up ice cream. So at Littleton, if you got caught saying something on the radio that you weren't, and the stations heard you and called you out on it, you owed ice cream to that station.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah. So I definitely had to deliver ice cream to one of my Cunningham stations one time because that, right? So I'm going to air the call. And as I'm going through my initial airing, I'm looking at the units like, wait a minute, this doesn't look right. And as my foot is on the pedal, I say, oh, what the hell did I do? And almost instantly the phones in dispatch were ringing and they're like, hey, who's that on the radio? Oh Rocky yes. Road
what
it
the
is.
Hell did I do again?
Yes. I was like, oh no. Funny.
You know, someone is going to hear this and they're going to say, we should do that. We should implement that.
Oh yeah.
When I was in dispatch, what we would do, we did something similar, but it wasn't for the radio. Man, now I wish we would have been doing that back then, because that is funny as hell. But we would, you made the news, you had to bring in a dozen, well, not a dozen donuts, but you'd have to bring in donuts for the shift, either the shift or at least enough for everyone else. But that was the thing. If you ended up in the news, on the newspaper or, you know, on TV or something like that for a call. And I actually think it was for good calls. It was not for the bad shit. I don't think anybody, was there, ever ended up on the news for that or anything, but there were a lot of times where we ended up in the news for good calls that we had taken and stuff. And they had done stories and we'd say, hey, you owe us donuts. And they'd say, ah, damn. All right, cool. And they would have to bring them in. So as we're talking about, you know, we were talking about the training process, how you got into it and everything else. Do you remember your first call or any earlier calls?
I don't remember my very first call. And probably because if you think about it, your very first call is in training. I definitely don't remember any of that because I was still like so deer in the headlights. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this job.
Yeah. And a lot of those are probably, you know, alarm calls, because those are the easiest ones to take. So they probably had you taking all these different alarm calls. I remember a lot of those alarm calls earlier on because anyone who I spoke to would have my name wrong. My name is Ricardo, but they would call me Carlos. Rodrigo. I think Frederico once, and I don't even know how they got that one, but I believe it's because when I would say my name, I would say it fast. So I would say Elegant Central, this is Ricardo. So I don't think they would hear the R part. They would just hear the Cardo and think that my name was Carlos. But the Frederico one, I will never know how that person called me that.
I don't know. I am always curious if people in other jobs, I don't ever remember getting my name, having someone give me my name wrong when I worked in like admin and stuff. But man, as a dispatcher, happens all the time. Like I get called Tara, Aaron. I've been called Sharon. And
I'm Aaron.
Like, well, it's Sarah.
Right. Yeah. The Aaron one. That's like Frederico. How are you going to get that?
Like, not sure that's close, but I don't know about you, but usually when that happens, I just don't even skip a beat. And I'm like, okay, how can I help you? Like, it takes more time and effort for me to correct you. Let's get going and how exactly. can I help you today?
Yep. Just continue going. Like, I will right? be whoever. Just give me the information so we can get somebody out there.
Right.
What about a call that has stuck with you?
Yeah, I've had a couple, good and bad. When I was working at Littleton, you know, I did get to deliver babies, even though I've only been in dispatch for 7 years, almost 7 years. I have actually been the call taker for 2 baby deliveries. My first one, they were in their car and the dad did amazing because they were on their way to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Obviously it was like, you know, I think their third child. So she was ready. And they just didn't make it. So they had pulled over to the shoulder and we got to deliver that baby in the backseat of that car. And right after the baby came out, my units pulled up right behind them. So
nice. See, then that's
that one was really awesome.
Yeah, that's one. Yeah, definitely. That will stick with you forever. I mean, not a lot of people can say that they've dealt with a call like that. You know, when my youngest was born, my 3-year-old, we were headed about 30, 35 minutes away. And when we got there, the midwife told us that had we waited any longer, like even 20 minutes longer, she would have given birth on the side of the highway.
So
I would have been the one calling for something similar that what you dealt with. Cause when we got there, we ended up doing a water birth, and man, it wasn't but like 10 minutes or something. And she was born. That was it. Wow. There was just enough time to get the water filled up to the right spot and bam, there's Livy.
Get her in there. Wow. Yeah. Your wife thanks you for getting her there to the water bath.
Oh yes. Yeah. it was something else, but yeah, I almost ended up being a caller like with what you dealt with. So you had that one, mm-hmm. and that's, yeah, that is something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I've been pretty fortunate. Again, I think it does also help that I'm more in suburbia type towns. Like my agencies, even when I worked at Douglas, a little bit more suburbia. I haven't had a lot of really terrible calls. I mean, I have had the really bad ones, you know, that again, you can't forget. You know, you hope that over time, like the flashes that go through your mind every once in a while lessen, but I don't think you'll really truly forget them. I will say thank you to you too, because after starting to listen to the podcast and, you know, follow you on Instagram and the I Am 911 movement and all of that stuff, I sort of started cataloging the calls that I could remember just for myself. Because I've heard you talk about, you know, you used to like to write because it was a lot easier sometimes than doing that whole verbal vomit on your loved ones.
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I used to love to write when I was younger, so I'm going to try it. And it actually is amazing. So I have to thank you for that, because I just started doing that a couple months ago of sort of just kind of going through my brain, cataloging the ones that I can remember up till now. And then while I'm at work, like it's on my Google Drive, so it's really easy for me to just pull up my page.
Perfect.
And then if I get a call, good or bad, sometimes I just jot down a quick little reminder thing so I can go back and like fill out the whole story later, but it's just there. I did have a funny one when I was working at Douglas County. This poor couple, and I'm going to say elderly couple. They sounded like they were probably in their 70s. Mm-hmm. First, I got a call from the wife, and she was calling because there was a raccoon outside, and she wanted me to send a deputy. I was trying to explain to her, well, you can't really send a deputy for a raccoon. That's not something that they deal with. You know, A, they don't have any traps. You need to call animal control or some type of pest control service. And I probably talked to her for like 10 minutes and through the course of the conversation, found out her and her husband were safe and inside. The dog was inside. The raccoon just happened to be outside and they were nervous about it. So we ended the conversation with, well, if it's still there in the morning, give me a call back. But at this point, if you don't need to go outside for any reason, then I think you're fine. The raccoon will find its way home in the middle of the night. Well, fast forward about another 15 minutes and I got an irate phone call from her husband who was angry that I wasn't doing anything about it. So again, still had to kind of ask him, well, what would you like? Well, I need someone to come out here right now. Well, sir, are you inside? Well, yeah, we're inside, but it's out on the deck and I can't open my door. Well, do you need to go outside? Well, no. Okay.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what else do you say? And as you're telling this, all I can see in my head for whatever reason is the raccoon chilling on the deck, you know, having a cocktail, looking at these people like, yeah, I'm going to hang out here.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure he was just sniffing around like, where do you keep your trash?
Yeah. Yeah. You guys help me out and I'll help you out and I'll leave. So let's do this.
Well, needless to say, that gentleman was not pleased with my answer. A deputy is not going to be responding to your home. Hopefully he doesn't hate me for life, but I mean, that was one rascally raccoon, that's for sure.
Oh man, I remember dealing with those as well. And people would call in and they would say the same thing. They're like, I think there's a rabid raccoon out here. I think it's got rabies or something. It's foaming at the mouth. And I told them, I said, the same thing as you. Do you need to go outside? Well, no, but it's out here. And, you know, if anybody comes by, I said, are you expecting any company? Well, no. I'm like, okay, just leave it alone and it'll probably leave. Or you can look up, you know, pest control. And I think one of the ones that we had was called like Wildlife Wranglers or something like that. And, but you know, it was just in the phone book. And they would say, well, you know, do you know the phone number? And I said, well, I got to go look for it in the phone book or go online and Google it really fast. And they'd say, oh, it's not something you just don't have like a list. And eventually we had so many people that were calling at one time that we did just make a list to have at everyone's console so that they could give them the name and number to somebody. But a lot of the times, you know, people would say, well, can you just call them for me? And I'd say, I really can't because, you know, this is the 911 center and we need to be able to have all of our lines open so that we can take those calls or be focused on those calls when they come in. I said, if you're, you know, I think a couple times for some, a couple elderly people, I did call for them, but I gave them their name and number to call them with their permission. And they did, you know, they went that way with it. But yeah, man, you know, people get pissed off when there's animals there. You know, you've got these, I don't know if they still have the TV show, but when I was in dispatch, there was a TV show called like Animal Cops or something like that. And they would, they would call in and say, you guys don't do this. And I'd say, it's not like it is on TV. It's different. But yeah, we would have to deal with that as well. So I know exactly what you're talking about. it would make the time go by fast. With other things that were going on. So going into the wrap up of this episode, I've got a question for you for us to go on and kind of discuss on a little bit as we're going into the wrap up here. But throughout the United States and probably in the world, actually, throughout the globe, dispatch centers are short staffed and it's like that everywhere. What do you think it is? You know, what can we do in your opinion? What can we do to get the next generation excited about this job and to make it a career? You know, one of the things that I think of is that it always has to start at the top. You know, you got to have the people at the top of in the centers have the same mindset that this is a career, that it's not just a stepping stone. It's not just a job. It's an actual career. You know, you start at the top and you bring it down to those that are, you know, taking the calls and everything.
Well, I'll apologize now because hopefully this isn't a really long answer, but I think there's several things that need to be done. And I agree with you about it starts from the top. but I think it starts from the tippy top, which I'm sure you're aware they're working on right now with the legislation on making it so that dispatchers are not considered administrative. Because we all know that are here doing this job every day or have done this job like you, that there is no secretary type capacity in a dispatching role. And you are truly a first responder. So with that, if that could get passed and our job in and of itself could get reclassified, I think that would help lead to it becoming more of a career or people actually seeing it as a career. And then it goes to the agency heads and things like that, taking pride in their dispatchers, which I believe is starting to happen more and more across the country, especially because you see now agencies are really buying into peer support and things like that, not just for deputies or firefighters or the paramedics that are out there, but for their dispatchers. When they have these, you know, huge events, either shootings, school shootings, or just a traumatic call where someone needs to take 5 minutes off the console. I think that centers are starting to become more aware of peer support, the need for peer support, and how effective and positive it can be for the dispatchers. Because again, we are first responders. So that, I think, will help. That sends people home saying, you know, if I like my job, if all the dispatchers that are already working, you know, go home and talk to their families and their friends and they express positive feelings about their job, their agency, and the work that they do, that spreads like wildfire. When you have the cranky Kathys and things like that that just complain and complain about work, but they continue to do the job, that sheds bad light on what dispatching is and the type of work it is. And then I think it goes, if you can get all the way down to these kids in high school, and I think anything younger than high school is probably too young, but I met a gal earlier this year. I was at a little class for kind of like dispatcher resilience and things like that. And she used to work for Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office out here in Colorado. And right now she's got a program with Warren Tech, which is one of our alternative schools, and it's high school students. And because she's been in the industry, her program here with Warren Tech is to help these high school students actually look at dispatching as a career. So that's exactly what she's working on, is she's trying to show these kids this is another possibility, this is a job that you can do long term, that it has, you know, immense benefits and things like that. And she was trying to set up some, you know, sit-ins and things like that for these students. And I think that's another key as well. If there's any way we can get these kids into these dispatch centers and show them what it's like. You know, you hate to have them be there on a day that's a bad call, but that's the job. So you can't hide that from them. They need to see it, and then they can make the decision, do I want to do this? Because just like you talking about doing your law radios and being busy and jamming, you're like, yeah, I'm pumped. That's when your blood started flowing, and that's when you got all tingly about your job. You might reach that kid, that high school kid that comes into a busy dispatch center and says, yeah, man, this is cool. I want to be a part of this. So it's like a very, it kind of has spread the whole spectrum, you know. I don't know any other way to say it other than that, but if all of these little pieces could kind of start getting hammered out, I think it would be huge and it would help with retention in centers. I will say, though, the agency that I'm at now is very different than any other dispatch center that I've been in, and we're pretty good with employee retention. It obviously is not as big as some of the big centers. We've got 3 shifts. Our full staffing is 7 dispatchers per shift. And we actually do a very different schedule. We are fire and EMS, right? So we're not law. But I think it could still lend to a law type environment. We do what they call a modified Kelly. So I actually work 24-hour shift where I go in at 7 a.m. and I stay in my building until 7 a.m. the next day. And I do get a break throughout the day, anywhere from like 1 hour to 2 hours, depending on what's going on, training and staffing. And then I get a 6-hour sleep window where I go down, you know, I'm either early sleep or I sleep from, I get 5:30 PM to midnight, or you have late sleep or you go down at midnight and then you come back out at 6:30. But you stay with your shift, and it's kind of like a rotating set where you work a 24-hour shift, you're off for 24 hours, you work for 24 hours, you're off for 24 hours, you work for 24 hours. So it's like basically 5 days in a row, I work 3 shifts, and then I'm off for the next 4 days. So I get a lot of time off, which means I'm home with my family more, which means I get time away from work and time to reflect, refresh, be ready to come back to work. And I also get that break between my days. So if I have a really bad call on my Monday, the very next day, my 24 hours off, I can be home and relax and like decompress. And then I can go back in the next day for my next shift and I'm ready to go. So it's a little bit different. It's a different way to look at it. But I think it works really well. And, you know, and each center kind of does what they think is best. But this was a totally new schedule to me. And it seems to work out really well. So that might be another way to get people excited to want to stay and do it. Like, I have a ton of time off. I take 1 day off out of my set and I get like 6 days off in a row. It's like a mini vacation.
Dang.
It's awesome. I know.
I'm listening and remembering what it was like when I was in dispatch and the amount of time off I got. And I thought, I'm thinking right now, damn, that does sound pretty good. I mean, that's pretty awesome. And everything that you're saying, you know, all these different factors to put together, you know, that's definitely a way for people to be getting excited. You know, this next generation to get excited for this job I've had. And this is in no way tooting my horn or anything, but just people have listened, and it's more actually towards like you and all of the people who have been a guest on the podcast, because I've had people send messages in who have said, you know, I found out about the podcast and started listening to it, and it sounds like a really cool job, and it's something that I would really like to do. And people have said, the reason I got into this is because I was listening to these people's stories. I was listening to the podcast. So again, it's not tooting my horn. It's more tooting all of your horns, because it's because of all of your stories that people have listened, and they want to get involved. They want to make a difference. I mean, that's what they've said, that it really means something, that it's such an important job, and to be able to connect with people that, yeah, it's very stressful. It's very hard, but it's something that they really want to do. So everything that you have said and other people that I've had on the podcast, actually within the last 6 months to, you know, just even the last year, I've had a couple people come on who have talked about different academies that are going on where they've got high school students that are coming in and they graduate from the academy. And if, you know, they want to go into dispatching, they've got those skills and they know how to do things. And some people have also asked me too, like, well, what does it take? And I tell them right off the bat, you know, it's common sense and being human. You get all the training later, but I mean, that's really what it is. You know, that's how it starts out and everything.
I think that it's widening the spectrum too on what agencies consider a good candidate. Because again, I got lucky. Doug and Sandy took a chance on me. I hadn't ever thought of dispatch or emergency services as a career. So I didn't have any college degree. I hadn't done any kind of, you know, criminal justice or emergency management. It was the furthest thing from my radar. My background at that point was basically customer service and being able to, you know, type really fast. So, but I wanted to help people. So, you know, yeah, you got to find a good fit. You know, personality is one thing. You know, you can't necessarily teach personality. You can teach skills. You just can't teach character. So that's one thing to remember. But also, you know, maybe that server that just really likes helping people but has never taken a chance on something new could be a fantastic fit.
For sure. And I've been at places when going to different conferences and sitting with a bunch of directors, and someone has come up and has taken an order and they're watching them multitask and everything. And at the end of it, they'll say to them, have you ever thought about going into dispatching? And they'd say, what do you mean? And then we'll say 911, where we work in 911, and they will give them a card. And there have been a couple times where they'd say, you remember that person that you know, that was there that we talked to at that one restaurant? Like, yeah, like, she's starting training or he, you know, whichever one. And I'm like, dang, that's pretty awesome. But that's how fast things like that can happen.
Yeah, that is awesome. You can find good people almost anywhere.
Exactly. So I want to thank you very, very much for being on this episode. This was a lot of fun. It was a lot of good information to come out and to be able to learn about you. So thank you again for being on the podcast. For those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode, as always, is supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. And this episode, along with all the others, can be heard 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.